Thanks for listening to the best of Outkick the Coverage podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the Coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the best of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis on Fox Sports Radio.
Live from the Geico Outkick Studios, happy Wednesday. And I thought the most entertaining thing that happened in the world of sports last night, if you don't count the Democratic debate day one, nearly 3 hours of that, was we're getting close to the Major League Baseball trade deadline. I believe it is tomorrow. We're going to talk with John Morosi in hour three. He's our Major League Baseball expert. Or is the trade deadline today at 4? Yeah, today at 4 Eastern. So we got, whatever the math is, about 10 hours till the trade deadline is officially here. And last night we had Yasiel Puig traded by the Cincinnati Reds, and he ended up also a part of a brawl. And I believe we have the audio. If you haven't seen the video on this, I clipped and grabbed a short segment of the video of the Cincinnati Reds pitcher being pulled out of the game and then making like a charge of the light brigade by himself right at the entire Pittsburgh Pirate team. It's a phenomenal video. I haven't even heard the audio of what it sounded like if you were listening to the game, but I believe we have all that queued up. Let me go ahead and bring in that audio. Here's what it sounded like last night. Cincinnati Reds going against the Pittsburgh Pirates. Game that is relatively uninteresting. Pitcher Amir Garrett is being pulled from the game, and he's not happy about what the Pittsburgh Pirates bench was saying, and this is what it sounded like.
And it looks like the Reds are going to make a double switch, and now Amir Garrett is headed to the Pirates dugout, and here we go. I don't know who he went after, but he got in there, and he is right in the middle of it.
Oh, my goodness.
And Amir Garrett is outnumbered, and here we go. Both sides have cleared.
I mean, Amir Garrett went straight to the dugout and threw a haymaker at somebody, and this is a real brawl. I mean, there are guys swinging left and right down there in front of that dugout.
I think it would have been amazing if nobody from the Reds had gone over to support Amir Garrett. To his credit, I have never seen one guy run at an entire team like this before. And his Cincinnati Reds teammates got there fairly fast. But this is absolutely wild to see a one-man bench-clearing brawl. I've never seen the pitcher that I can think of. I can't ever remember the pitcher being pulled from a game. And yesterday, was it yesterday we had when two nights ago, when Trevor Bauer got pulled from the game and he just turned and heaved the ball all the way over the center field wall, which is an incredible throw. I mean, like, you talk about a big arm. To throw the ball that far to begin with was pretty incredible. But I've never seen that before. I've never seen a pitcher getting pulled from a game get so angry that he turns and just hurls the ball all the way over the center field wall. I'm not even sure how many pitchers could do that, to throw the ball that far. But then I've never seen a pitcher getting pulled from a game and instead of leaving the mound. I mean, I've seen sometimes some jawing, but I've never seen a pitcher just decide to run straight off the mound and start a brawl as he's getting pulled from a game. Let me pull in the crew. We got to break down this baseball fight. Only time we really lead with baseball on this show is when there are brawls or when it's the World Series. That's pretty much it. So Danny G, when you saw this, have you ever seen a pitcher charge an opposing team's dugout like this by himself? I mean, this was unbelievable.
Yeah, no way. None of us have ever seen anything like this. And the most impressive part, besides him taking on the whole team, was the fact he had a punch loaded as he was running.
Yeah, and he hit nobody. Like, made zero contact. It looks to me like he threw three punches. And the first one was obviously the one that was the most potentially powerful. And he didn't hit anybody. And he ended up just kind of in a mosh pit of Pittsburgh Pirates players. And they could have ended him, right? I mean, because if you charge like 10 dudes, I think they were probably shocked that he did it. But they were, you know, just kind of, it seemed, trying to grab him as opposed to anybody else really throwing back punches at him. And then the Reds players got there and the whole thing was a total melee.
Yeah, and the ironic part, you were just talking about Trevor Bauer throwing the ball over the center field wall, and then he becomes part of the trade for Puig.
Oh, that's a great point. That's a great point. Like, this is tying in both sides. Dub, which one do you think was more unexpected? The turning and throwing the ball all the way over center field, which I've never seen before, or the charging of the mound, charging of the dugout from the pitcher's mound as you're being pulled out of the game?
Well, unexpected, I'm going to have to go with Bauer because, like you said, I have literally never, ever in my life seen a pitcher about to get pulled from a game and chuck it over the center field
wall. How about
wall.
His arm that he could throw it that far?
Well, I mean, I'm not going to sit here and act surprised that Trevor Bauer has an amazing arm, but I will admit, I mean, I am curious to see how many major league pitchers could actually do that. They should make this a little competition at the home run derby or something.
Whatever it is, 350 probably yards almost, right, or feet, sorry, 350 feet. I mean, that's, you know, that's basically throwing a baseball the entire length almost of a football field. Right, I mean that's a pretty incredible throw, even though it's a baseball, to have the ability to turn it. Because his teammates, as the ball is sailing through the air, first of all, like, they've never seen it before. Like, you can see their reaction, and then you can read the mouth of I think it's Terry Francona who's pulling him, and he's like, what, you know, WTF? Like, what in the world are you, like, why would you even think to do that? And I guess he's lucky his center fielder is that he has a big enough arm he didn't hit him, because you're not really paying that much attention probably in center field when the pitcher's getting pulled. But the Amir Garrett play, pretty extraordinary. Eddie Garcia, you've been doing updates since D-Day. Have you ever seen anything like this?
No, I will say I think that Rob Dibble back in the day for the Reds threw a ball after a game into the seats and got in trouble because he hit a fan.
Oh, of course. Dibble was an amazing, like, Rob Dibble, who later did Fox Sports Radio, didn't he?
He did, yes, he did.
For
actually.
A long time.
Yeah.
He and Norm Charlton back in the day, and
yeah, Nasty Boys.
Randy Myers, I think it was,
yes,
right?
That's correct.
The Nasty Boys,
right.
Was an incredible trio. And Rob Dibble, yeah, like, that doesn't really surprise me that he threw a ball into the crowd, but throwing it all the way over center field is pretty incredible.
I do have to go, though, with charging the dugout, because this is one of those rare occasions where it's both crazy and just ballsy at the same time. I guess that's not rare, but, I mean, I was both impressed and, like, what are you doing? Are you crazy? But now, I've never seen a pitcher charge a dugout before.
Do we have any audio? Was there any discussion afterwards? Like, what was said that he got him so angry that he wanted to, like, I don't have any idea. I haven't seen anybody, like, really explaining this. Does anybody know? Do we have any explanation yet after the game? He talked to the media. I didn't even know. That had to be one of the most exciting things for the year for a Cincinnati Reds beat writer. So Amir talked to the media after the game. Here's what he had to say.
At the end of the day, it's about protecting your teammates, protecting yourself, stuff like that. So, like I said, the emotions got the best of me, and you know, I was fed up with it. I'm going to accept any punishment that I have. And as a man, you know, I take on that responsibility. And, you know, like I said earlier, you know, I apologize for my actions. But, you know, I just, you know, in the heat of things, you know, sometimes it gets the best of you.
But it still doesn't explain what happened. Like, in order to charge a dugout from the mound, you would think craziness has to real, like, somebody has to do something.
Well, these guys that got in a brawl earlier in the beginning of the season, April 7th, they got in a big old brawl also. So is this,
yeah, I mean, I understand that. Yeah, that's a good point. Thanks for, you know, there's a bad blood between the Reds and the Pirates.
And they're in the
Pirates.
Same division, so this has been going on for a few years already.
But I think this is just my evidence that baseball players get bored over a 162-game season, and probably the stress level is a little bit higher because it's around the trade deadline. Again, the trade deadline today at 4 o'clock Eastern. So maybe you're just kind of on edge in general. But I don't ever remember seeing a pitcher charge the opposing team dugout like this. And he sounds so calm in the postgame, you would think that they would have to do something just outside the bounds of normal acceptable conduct in baseball in order for you to be doing something that has, honestly, I've never seen before. I mean, I've seen a lot of times, a pitcher, you know, sometimes leaving the mound will jaw with the opposing side, and there's always that that possibility. But to charge the opposing, I would love to hear the Reds conversation about how stunned they were that their pitcher just went in full on by himself. And, you know, the rest of the team under baseball code has to get there and help defend him. But they had to be totally stunned. Now, the rest of the team's already on the field, so they can get there pretty quickly. Because if they had been batting, for instance, and something like this happens, then you got to get the whole team out of the dugout. It takes a long time to get over there. But this is pretty wild. How many games do you think Amir Garrett gets suspended for this? Like, you know, it's always the complicating thing about a baseball suspension for a pitcher. It's never that fair compared to a regular player because a pitcher, you know, doesn't perform every single game. So you give a pitcher a 5 or 7 game suspension, it might only cause one game to be missed. Well, you know, it's not as big of a deal.
5 games for a reliever is probably a little more harsh than for a starter, because a starter goes every 5 days. So
yeah.
So I'm thinking it's a minimum of probably 10 games, I'm thinking.
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to suspend pitchers differently than you do regular season players, everyday players, because obviously of what you said, they're not necessarily on the field every single game. But, yeah, reliever, a little bit different. Starting pitcher, you know, you get a 7 or 8 game suspension. You're like, okay, he misses one game because he misses just one start in the rotation. But what do you think, Danny? Like, how many games do you get for charging the entire opposing team dugout?
That was pretty nasty. I'm thinking that's got to be at least a 20-game, right?
What about a pitcher, like, risking his entire career on a punch?
Yeah.
Can you imagine? I mean, because it's easy if you're I can't imagine that he throws pitches.
Yeah, and he did wind up that punch
up
with his pitching hand too.
That's why I'm thinking
it was a left hand. Yeah.
That's why I'm thinking it's going to be more than 10 is because of those huge windups the guy had.
But I mean, think about it. If he hits somebody in the face, even the chances of him severely injuring his wrist or his hand or his shoulder or his elbow, it's pretty high in a melee like that. And so it's like when they say, you know, a NFL quarterback blocks and they're like, never lead the block with your throwing arm. Right. So, and a lot of times in the heat of the moment, guys do it anyway, but if you're a right-handed quarterback and for some reason, you know, you're trying to run an end around and the end around comes back in your direction and you end up being the lead blocker, which happens, you know, generally speaking, a few times a year where it's a highlight and the quarterback peels off and just wipes somebody out, you always get nervous when you get that, you know, not normal body movement where you're leading the block, and you don't want to lead certainly with your throwing shoulder because you don't want to get injured like that. I mean, for a pitcher, I would think it's even crazier to do what Amir Garrett did there.
And then David Bell, the manager of the Reds, was already ejected from the game, and he came in to – get a piece of Clint Hurdle, the manager of the Pirates.
That's really funny. Well, did you see the like super slow-mo? Did you see the cop who just has zero
interest? Oh, yeah, that was cool, yeah.
That was so great. He's like, I'm not getting paid.
This is not my problem. This is your problem.
Yeah. And this is, I think, entertaining for baseball, but I am curious to see what they do with him. All right. We'll open up the phone lines. What's the this thing is going to be fun discussion. What's the best brawl that's ever existed in the history of sports? It's a good question for you guys too. Think on it as we go to break. Like the best one that you can remember ever having watched. I've got mine. I'll lead. But the best brawl that you've ever seen in sports. Most entertaining brawl that you've ever seen in sports. 877-996-6369 in honor of Amir Garrett's, just absolute charge of the Pittsburgh Pirates dugout from the mound. And if you haven't seen this video yet, the video is incredible. I clipped like 10 seconds and tweeted it last night. You can go to my Twitter feed at Clay Travis and actually check it out. I guarantee you it will give you a good laugh to start off your Wednesday morning. But what is the best brawl in the history of sports? 877-996-6369. I am Clay Travis. This is Outkick the Coverage on Fox Sports Radio.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Live from the Geico Outkick Studios. Hope you're having a great Wednesday wherever you may be. Thanks to all of you on Twitter who, unlike the entire staff here, immediately knew that I was talking about Johnny Cueto, who was a pitcher for the Cincinnati Reds in a brawl against the St. Louis Cardinals. And there was he got up against the backstop and he was kicking. And I don't think his career went very well after that, but I've never really seen anybody kick in a brawl before. That seemed like it kind of moved beyond the usual brawl shenanigans. And also, I should have mentioned this one because the audio on it was pretty incredible. The Miami FIU brawl in college football happened back in 2006, and it was incredible. It was a wild ongoing brawl, and I think there were like 13 people kicked out. And Lamar Thomas was a broadcaster who was calling that game, and like basically he was saying he wanted to get in the brawl himself, and he was praising the Miami football team for winning the brawl. That was a pretty iconic one as well, especially if you're a college football fan. All right, so. And again, we're talking about the Amir GIF. If you're just starting off your morning with us, make sure you go to Twitter and just look at the video of Amir Garrett, Cincinnati Reds pitcher, charging the entire Pittsburgh Pirate dugout, leading to a bench-clearing brawl last night in the game between the Pirates and the Reds. We're going to be joined by Darren Revelle, who now works at God, there's too many things that sound the same. We've got The Athletic. We've got The Atlantic.
Is he Action?
And we have the Action Network. Everybody has to have an A that they start with, so I got to be careful in making sure that I get the right associational value there. But last night, LeBron James has turned this Taco Tuesday thing into a trend. He gets on his Instagram and he does a Taco Tuesday announcement. I don't know if he always does it in a Mexican accent, but this is what it sounded like last night. LeBron James announcing to Taco Tuesday in a Mexican accent. Here's what it sounded like.
Taco Tuesday, I found you. Y'all know what today is. Taco Tuesday, we're for you. I'm blessed today that I found you, baby. You know what that day is! Taco Tuesday! Taco Tuesday!
All right, that is LeBron James pretending to be Mexican announcing Taco Tuesday. Now,
that didn't sound like a Mexican accent.
That is 1,000,000,000% his attempt
at a Mexican
accent.
That's what he's trying to do, yeah.
If you watch the video, it's clear. Okay, so I'm not a Mexican. I'm not a Hispanic person. So I want to start here. So this question for everybody out there. If a white athlete decides, and look, I think it's kind of crazy that we associate any food with any particular racial group, but we had the controversy back in the day when Fuzzy Zeller said like he was going to have collard greens and watermelon or whatever it was, right, in his Masters dinner in honor of Tiger Woods. If a white pro athlete came on and said, like, hey, it's Fried Chicken Thursday, and he said it in a black accent, and like it would be like he would get suspended, he might get kicked out of the league, right? If he wasn't an incredible player, it would go viral. Everybody would be like, oh my God, this is incredibly and insanely insensitive, right? So LeBron James, Taco Tuesday, impersonating a Mexican person or Hispanic person, it's pretty clear that's what he's doing. Roberto,
yeah,
your thoughts. Like, so do you agree with me? Like, imagine Donald Trump did this, all right? Imagine that a white guy did the exact same thing that Donald Trump. Like, Donald Trump, remember, got ripped for saying that he liked tacos, which is actually really funny. People were like,
he liked Taco Bell.
Yeah, but it was like, didn't Donald Trump get accused of being racist?
Yeah, he did.
Against Hispanic people? And he said, like, that's impossible. I love tacos. Which is, by the way, whether you love or hate Trump, that's such a ridiculously funny response. People are like, hey, you're racist against Hispanic people. And Trump's like, what are you guys talking about? I love tacos. I mean, that is an incredible, like, can you imagine that? Like, somebody's like, man, you know, whoever you know out there at your job, right? Like, man, did you hear what so-and-so said? It was really insensitive about Hispanic people. And then, like, you confront him with it, and he's like, what are you talking about? I love chips and salsa. I go get margaritas on Taco Tuesday all the time. How could you possibly think that I'm racist? So that would be an incredible defense.
It was like on Cinco de Mayo, if I remember, that Trump took the picture with the tostada bowl.
That's what it was. That's what it was. It was like a taco bowl.
It was on Cinco de Mayo.
That is straight up phenomenal, right? Like whether you love or hate Trump, the fact that he decided—it's really funny. That's what it was. The fact that he decided to get a picture taken on Cinco de Mayo and saying like, "Hey, that's what it was." All my Hispanic supporters. Thanks to all my Hispanic supporters, and it showed him eating like a taco salad or something.
Yeah, with his thumb up.
Yeah, that is amazing, right? All right, so that's what the story was. But can you imagine if Donald Trump was like, hey, we got a new trend at the White House, Taco Tuesday, and then he did a video and he did a Mexican accent while he talked about how much he liked tacos. It would be everywhere, and everybody would be like, yeah, that's kind of racist, dude. So LeBron does Taco Tuesday in a Mexican accent. Your thoughts, Roberto?
Well, the first time I saw it, I thought it was... I thought it was kind of dumb. We did it the first time. I was like, oh, okay, whatever. I guess he's trying to be funny. And this last time, it's a little much. It's kind of annoying. It's kind of going overboard with it this time.
Is this the first time that he's done the Mexican accent?
He did that last Tuesday. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, last Tuesday. You know, the one thing that, I mean, it takes a lot for me to be offended. I mean, I'm not offended by it.
I think, let me say this, by the way. Sorry to cut you off.
Yeah.
In general, I think people who listen to this show rank low on the offensive chart. Yeah. I just think it's interesting. I wanted to get your perspective on it because it is interesting how we have different standards of speech for different people. And again, if Donald Trump did this, and you could say, well, he's the president, but I mean, I think if there were a white pro athlete doing this, it could very well turn into a story as well. Like, why does LeBron get a pass to do a Mexican accent? When again, if somebody out there was doing like Fried Chicken Thursday or whatever,
yeah,
Fried Chicken Friday, and a white guy came on and did a black accent, or a Hispanic guy did, or an Asian guy did, it would be a huge story, right? Be like, oh my God, can you believe this? It's so racist. So why is LeBron, a black guy, able to do a Mexican voice and nobody even reacts?
Exactly. That's like the one thing that I'm like, come on, LeBron, you're supposed to be this guy who's all about social issues or racial issues. You would think it'd be more self-aware of like what he's doing, no?
A social justice warrior.
Exactly. He's over here trying to be like a Mexican accent on the Taco Tuesday. I'm Mexican. I don't eat tacos on Tuesday. I eat tacos all the time.
I love tacos. you don't separate. Like, yeah. Eddie, do you have a Hispanic background?
Yes. My grandparents are from Mexico, dad's parents.
All right. So in addition to fighting in World War II and storming the beaches on Normandy and doing all the updates for the last 70 years, what do you think? Like, is my analogy here somewhat correct in that, like, LeBron maybe gets a pass here and it doesn't make sense if you apply every other standard of perpetually offended social media justice here?
Yeah, I mean, I think I agree a lot with Roberto. This doesn't offend me as someone who has Latino roots. But at the same time, if LeBron is going to be this big social justice warrior, I mean, I shake my head that he's behaving in a way, even though he's trying to be funny. I don't think he's trying to be malicious, but you know, he's sensitive in certain areas. Let's say
we can't players are not, they're not owned by owners anymore.
He's sensitive in some areas,
he was offended by
but not
the use
in others.
Of the word posse, right? He's like, that's racially insensitive. So if you're going to be out there saying like you're a big social justice warrior and you're offended by other people's word choices, then when you pretend to be a Mexican person on Taco Tuesday, it's like, that's not really kind of fitting your overall brand, right? Like when he also said that he wanted to make that Jewish money, which, you know, like a lot of people were like, hey, you know, like you're using a stereotype associated with Jewish people, whether it's a positive or a negative stereotype in a context that has led to a otherness.
And the way he's saying Taco Tuesday is kind of like, being the stereotype, and the way he's screaming, supposedly having the Mexican in Spanish say grito, like Spanish, the way we would scream. It's kind of like being stereotypical about that too as well.
Yeah, I mean, I just think it's intriguing. So you would say the same thing, Eddie. Like, I mean, and you guys agree that if this standard were flipped, like let's pretend that we talked about Donald Trump posing with the taco salad. He got ripped for that. I think it was kind of funny and ridiculous. But if Trump had Taco Tuesday in the White House and he did a Mexican accent, it would be like people would lose their minds.
There's no doubt people would lose their minds. Of course they would.
Yeah,
lose
definitely.
Their minds.
And you could be like, well, that's because he's president. But LeBron James is, you know, a major public figure. And so I think this is intriguing. We haven't ever done this before, but I'm going to do this quickly. Dub, let's see if you can do this. Hispanic only jury. Hispanic only jury. King James is on trial.
Oh, you're working your way through the rainbow of colors.
That's right. That's right. Hispanic only jury right now. By the way, more Hispanic. You talk about like the overall population of the United States. Way more Hispanic people now live in the United States than black people. Hispanic people are the second largest minority in the United States. I think that surprises a lot of people because they haven't paid attention to census data. Me, on the other hand, I'm poring over census data all the time. But, you know, there's obviously the most people are white, and then you got Hispanic people, and then you got black people, and then you got Asian people. There's your lesson in diversity for the day from Outkick the Coverage. But Hispanic-only jury, we haven't done this before. Hispanic-only jury, LeBron James is on trial. Did he culturally approach? Can we just cut the second? We don't need the singing part because I didn't hear that part. Just the part where he does the Mexican accent. Do we have that? Like saved on the, for people who are just waking up and haven't heard this, Hispanic only jury reacts. You guys are putting, we're putting LeBron James on trial, but only Hispanic people. And in particular, if you're Mexican, I guess this would be more even like Hispanic is a broad category, right? This seems the Taco Tuesday.
Yeah, it's a Mexican.
It's a Mexican
thing,
impersonation.
Yeah.
So maybe do we need to specify?
What about my family in Spain and Portugal?
No.
No.
Oh.
They don't count.
So
tacos are Mexican.
Mexico only?
I don't know about Mexico only, but we'll give you a pass if Hispanic. Only Hispanic people get to be on our jury. We've never done a Hispanic-only jury. You guys, we're putting LeBron James on trial, determine whether or not he's racist for doing the Mexican accent here on Taco Tuesday. Do we have it again? Do we have just LeBron's accent? And by the way, if you watch it, is there any disagreement that that's what he's doing? Like, does everybody agree that he is pretending to be Mexican in this audio?
I totally agree with you there.
Totally agree. Eddie, you totally agree?
Yes.
Danny G, are you now in agreement?
Well, I wasn't in disagreement. I just think he's being silly.
Yeah,
He's just being a dumb blank. But
gotta be careful.
Yeah, dude.
Gotta be careful there. You're on the mic. You gotta drop you.
What? I said blank.
I don't even know what the blank is, but I know we'd have been in trouble if you said it. All right. So here is we're trying to put LeBron James on trial for racism, and you just put
Danny
us all
G
on trial.
Trial.
Danny, we gotta put Danny G on trial now. Only Spanish and Portugal people can weigh in on Danny G. All right, so let's go with the here is the audio. LeBron James, Mexican LeBron James, on Taco Tuesday. Here it is.
You know what that day is? Taco Tuesday! Taco Tuesday!
That is social justice warrior LeBron James,
exactly.
A black man pretending to be Mexican because he's eating tacos. Is it racist or not? Dub, are you fielding the calls? How is the Hispanic jury coming?
I'm on the phone right now, so it's coming along.
All right, only Hispanic callers. Will we get a loaded jury box for Hispanic callers?
I say we will.
I think we will, probably. But I don't know for sure. We've never done the Hispanic jury before. We've done the black jury. We've done the white jury. I don't think we've done the Asian jury. We haven't had an Asian controversy, have we?
No.
We could find something with Jeremy Lin. Like back in the day, we could have had an Asian controversy. Jeremy Lin's been in the news, right? Because he's like, I can't play in the NBA anymore.
Yeah, I read that article.
But I don't know that that's really that controversial. So we don't need an Asian jury yet. But Asian people out there, I don't want you to think that I'm leaving you out. At some point, there will be a controversy, and it'll be like the greatest morning of your life because I'll be like, hey, big deal. We got an all-Asian jury time for Asian people to weigh in. So right now, LeBron James on trial for his Mexican impersonation. Is it racist on Taco Tuesday to be doing it?
Well, I want to say one thing, because if you worked in FM radio in California, when the DJs go into the mix, you'll hear the DJs do that. How did you say it in Spanish, Roberto?
In Spanish, it's called El Grito Mexicano.
Yeah, like live in the mix. And then in the background, you hear the DJ go, in noises like that. That's like a California-type thing. And I don't know if anyone finds that racist. It might be stereotypical, but it's like a party cry.
All right, but the voice of the Mexican guy, again, play this. Like, this is clearly, like, if the standard is you are not allowed to impersonate stereotypes of other races without being racist. And again, I just want to picture everybody out there right now, pretend that Donald Trump on the new Cinco de Mayo is like, hey, it's Cinco de Mayo in the White House and we're celebrating, and this is what it sounds like.
You know what that day is? Taco Tuesday!
Whether you are excusing anything else, like, that's clearly LeBron James trading on Mexican stereotypes.
Okay, that last sound he made was creepy.
Yeah, it's clearly him pretending to be Mexican while celebrating Taco Tuesday.
Isn't he praising the taco, though?
Take a step back. Everybody loves fried chicken, right? Everybody on earth loves fried chicken. I've never met somebody who's like, you know what I don't like? Chicken that's fried, right? But if any other race decided they were going to have Fried Chicken Friday, and as part of Fried Chicken Friday, they pretended to be black in their endorsement of fried chicken, nobody would be like, but you know, what he's really saying is that he loves fried chicken. So I'm not going to give LeBron a pass because he loves tacos, because also I would say, who doesn't like tacos? This is my problem with races getting to own foods. Like, everybody loves fried chicken. Why is it only associated with black people? And, like, everybody loves tacos. I guess I understand that a little bit more because tacos theoretically came out of Mexico, right? But I don't see it like everybody. The great thing about America, the entire purpose of the melting pot, is we get to steal all the best foods that exist all over the world and make them ours.
Yeah, burrito,
right?
The burrito's
fantastic. Watermelon, fantastic. Like everything, like all the foods that people are like associate with the race or whatever, they typically are pretty beloved by everybody. Like lasagna is Italian. I don't know very many people who are like, you know what, I hate lasagna. We created pizza. Pizza's not even Italian. We made that ourselves. But if you want to attribute pizza as being an Italian dish and you want to do like an Italian voice, I don't know anybody out there who's like, you know what, I hate pizza. Like, foods that are incredibly popular with everyone shouldn't be able to be owned by a race.
And if LeBron wants to eat some real Mexican tacos, I wouldn't be eating the ones that he's posting on his videos.
There you go. As a Mexican, you're offended by the falsehood of the Mexican tacos in addition to his voice. All right, Dub, how is the Hispanic jury coming?
We got a few people that are wanting to weigh in here.
Well, this is disappointing on behalf of, like, we have a substantial Hispanic component to the show. Roberto
Racist.
And Eddie Garcia, are you offended that Hispanic people have not wanted to be a part of the Hispanic jury?
Yeah, they should be
disappointed.
Yeah, disappointed. They should be up already.
I mean, it's the biggest minority group in the country.
Racist.
I didn't even hear that, but I'm going to
Roberto said they should be up already.
It's actually really funny. It was like that, what was the Dave Chappelle? Did you guys see the most recent Dave Chappelle special?
Stand up?
Yeah. Where he was like, he was like, there's a guy on the front row who's Mexican and his girlfriend was Chinese or something. And did you see this?
No, but those jokes are always the best, though.
Yeah, but the girl was like, I'm offended, you know, like by you know, that recent joke that she said. And Chappelle said, he went back and he's like, so what are you? You're, you know, Chinese and your boyfriend is, you know, Mexican. She's like, yeah. And he's like, man, I don't know anything else, but you guys are going to have the hardest working kid ever. And he said, the entire place erupts in laughter, and the woman just stands up, and she's like, I will never come to one of your shows again, Dave Chappelle. And his point was like, if you are coming to my show, like, what do you expect me to say as jokes, right? Like, that, you know, like, that is really kind of funny in and of itself, right? That, like, how could you love Dave Chappelle and then get offended by a joke like that? Like, what did she think she was coming to see? I don't know. But anyway, let's go. We have a shortage of Hispanic jurors. This is I'm really disappointed. Only four. We have 10 lines, and only four of the jurors are willing to call in and be our Hispanic jury. But Dub, who should we go to first?
All right, we got Kevin in South Texas.
Kevin in South Texas.
Hey, what's going on, Clay? First of all, I want to apologize for my Latinos. They're probably in line in the taqueria getting their tacos ready, the real tacos. For
it's true.
So to go ahead and go pick the sandias, the watermelons, and to raise the chickens that we're eating. So I do want to apologize on that part. But I do want to say one thing. First of all, being a Mexican-American, I don't get offended by people making, you know, the Taco Tuesday sort of deal. I find it, you know, kind of, hey, you know what, they're putting our food there, but
yeah, see, time, praising it, praising the taco.
I'm praising it, man. I'm all for it. Hey, and, you know, one of the things about you know, us Latinos is, you know, we don't really get offended very easily. You know, we're one of those races that, yeah, we'll chuckle at your jokes, but if you only knew what we had to say about you, you know. yeah. But at the same time, yeah, I don't get offended. First of all, I'm not a LeBron fan, but anyway, I find it amusing. Viva la raza, and you have a good day, Clay.
Yeah, I got to give credit to the Hispanic community, because in this age where everybody is perpetually offended, I don't remember like the Hispanic community ever rising up and being offended, right? Like the black community in general, again, is like, for whatever reason, perpetually offended. And that's why I think the analogy here is interesting. If LeBron James is going to be a social justice warrior, yeah, one of the things about being a social justice warrior is you have to constantly be putting yourself in other people's shoes and thinking about how they might see you. And like the Mexican,
and that's why this is annoying, like, pretty much.
Right.
Yeah.
All right, who's next, Dub?
We got Joe in Santa Ana.
Joe in Santa Ana, your thoughts.
What up, Clay? You guys are my morning drive every day, and I'm calling you from Santa Ana, like the heartbeat of Mexican people in Orange County, California.
Yeah.
And I am Mexican, and my dad is a Mexican from Mexico, and my mom is from here. But you know what? He is basically the pot calling the kettle black, and he's being a hypocrite. Because you know what? I understand people like the fascination of talk.
Oh, no. The heartbeat of Orange County in Santa Ana. I think we lost him right as he was saying LeBron was being a hypocrite.
Yeah,
all right.
I know.
Hispanic jury, who's up next?
We got Rico in Kansas City.
Rico in Kansas City.
Hey, guys. Just want to say, Roberto, I'm a huge fan. And
thank
Clay,
you.
It just bothers me like to no end to, you know, hear these guys always complaining about President Trump or somebody else saying anything about the black community. But it's okay to go ahead and, you know, make any jokes about the racial component of the country and the Latino side. And that stuff is stuff that I joke about all the time. I make white jokes, I make black jokes, Puerto Rican, Polish jokes, left and right, Italian jokes. I'm from New York City. I'm from Rochester, New York, sorry. But these guys just constantly just stir the pot, and I just, It really does bother me. It's very annoying.
Yeah, look, thanks for the call. My position would be that just you need to apply an even standard. And let's go to, I think the final member of our Hispanic jury. Who do we got?
Yeah, we got Jose in California.
Jose, what do you think?
Hey, guys, how's it going?
Excellent.
I'm right here just stuck on the 10 freeway. There's, like, stuck in traffic for, like, already half an hour. I want to say I'm not so offended because he's not like criticizing something so heavy. I mean, it's a taco. Let's not make it into something that it doesn't have to be. He's not talking about like war or things like that, you know?
Yeah.
And like, I'm full Mexican. I'm like, my mom's from Mexico. My dad's from Mexico, same town. And I came over here when I was only 2 years old. So, but now I got everything. I'm legit. So I just want to say, I live in L.A., so you know, what is there, like 70% Hispanic? I don't know, but it's a lot.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I don't find it so offensive.
All right,
I mean,
thanks.
I'm a lot. All right, guys.
Yeah, we got to go to break, but thanks for the call. Good luck with the traffic. This is Outkick the Coverage on Fox Sports Radio.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
Ooh. Welcome back, Geico Outkick Studios. John Morosi joins us now. He's our Major League Baseball insider. You can watch him all over the place. John, I know it's a busy day for you because the Major League Baseball trade deadline is today at 4, and we'll get to that in a moment. But first, Amir Garrett is leaving the mound, getting pulled from the game, and he charges the Pittsburgh Pirates bench 1-on-10 or 12. Have you ever seen anything like this before?
I have not, Clay, and good morning. Happy trade deadline day to you. I was very surprised to see this last night, to say the very least. A lot of tension between these two teams, going back to a benches clearing melee in April. So on some level, it was not surprising to see a brawl, a melee between these teams. But having it be initiated by a pitcher running off the mound and effectively challenging an entire dugout was not on my list of likely options last night. I got to say, it was obviously not appropriate and not something you would typically see in baseball. But you've on some level, that takes a fair amount of courage to take on an entire team willingly. And Amir Garrett is a very brave man. He'll be suspended certainly, but that was quite a moment last night in Cincinnati.
How much of a suspension do you think he'll get?
Great question. I think 10 games is about where I think this could come down, because essentially I'm not sure from a disciplinary standpoint how you would rhetorically say that this should be handled much differently from when a batter charges the mound. It's a similar act, a different direction, and different, very different odds, very different ratios of number of players versus the other side. But I would imagine that charging the mound and charging the dugout are similar actions, and I think 10 games seems to be about the right measure there. It's really something that we have not seen happen very often. So it's the precedent on this, the case history is not very thick. And I'll be really, really interested to see how Joe Torre handles things here in the coming days.
Yeah, it will be fascinating. All right, you mentioned it earlier on your intro, and we've talked about it during the course of the show today. 4:00 Eastern Major League Baseball trade deadline. What do you expect to happen? Who are the players potentially on the trading block that people might recognize out there? And which teams do you think might be the most active, either as buyers or sellers?
Well, I'll start, Clay, with the pitching side of the equation here. And I think we're going to see a number of moves. And we'll see that because we've seen this week Trevor Bauer last night going to the Reds in an agreed-upon trade. And, of course, Yasiel Puig involved in the brawl. That was his last act as a Cincinnati Red. He's in the process of getting traded to the Cleveland Indians. So remarkable on that level as well. But Madison Bumgarner, I think we'll see him traded. I do. I think we'll see Robbie Ray move. I think we'll see Noah Syndergaard move. Because simply the fact that Trevor Bauer and Marcus Stroman were traded this week to teams that we did not really see as being buyers means there's still a lot of leftover demand. And that here on the morning of the deadline, a lot of buyers have yet to satisfy their need for a starting pitcher. So I think we'll see a lot of movement in that regard. The New York Yankees, Clay, and this is, in general, I would say the market moves best and quickest on the deadline when the Yankees are involved, because they have a way of driving the conversations with their sheer relevance and effect on the industry. And that's the case today. They need starting pitching in the worst way. So whether it's Bumgarner, Robbie Ray, Mike Minor, there's a lot of different possibilities there. I would doubt Noah Syndergaard in city, so to speak, but I would look for them to be very aggressive. The Yankees, Matthew Boyd's one more name. A lot of lefties I just mentioned, but I think in general, righty or lefty, the Yankees have some work to do before 4 p.m. Eastern time today.
We're talking to John Morosi. He is our Major League Baseball insider, joins us weekly. All right, let's go to the NL Central, because one of the things about the trade deadline that becomes fascinating is it's kind of a sign of which teams are throwing in the towel, which believe that they still have a chance to win the division or get into the wild card race. The NL Central is wild right now, right? I'm not sure how many division races we're actually going to end up with coming down the stretch of the baseball season. But right now, the Cardinals, the Cubs, and the Brewers are separated by 1.5 games at the top of the NL Central. Do you think these three teams look to be active? What exactly is going on here in what is by far the most competitive division race in all of baseball?
Love it, Clay. And it's a great point by you about just how compact they are. And this is where the trade deadline becomes a window into a team's soul, because it really will tell you what they think of themselves and if they believe their roster is worth it, the upgrades. If they believe they've got a chance to really win the World Series, you'll see them behave in a very particular way. I think Theo Epstein in Chicago has always been aggressive at the deadline. This goes back to, he traded Nomar Garciaparra now 15 years ago. Amazing it's been that long, but that was 15 years ago at Boston, and of course went on to win the World Series. So I believe they'll find a way to get one more bat. I think Nicholas Castellanos in Detroit's been someone that they've talked about. It fits them well, a righty bat to balance things out, and especially in the National League playoffs. You want as many righty bats as possible because you're going up against the Dodgers and all those great left-handed pitchers there. So I would say pay close attention there to Castellanos with the Cubs. Will Smith, the reliever, potentially going to the Cardinals. They have been very interested in upgrading their bullpen with one more lefty arm. Carlos Martinez actually has done a pretty good job as a closer, got another save last night. But I do believe getting one more lefty reliever for the end of the game is very key for the St. Louis Cardinals. And then with the Brewers, Clay, they've needed pitching for a long time. They just haven't really been able to make the impact move. And I think that we'll look back probably on this era of Brewers baseball. They may get a pitcher now. They might. I mean, there's certainly still time for them. They traded for Jordan Lyles this week, and I think they probably need more. And they needed more last year and the year before that. If they had made the right moves last year, it's very possible that they would have defeated the Dodgers in the National League Championship Series. But, Clay, to me, they've been very cautious, and I think at times too cautious. And I think one other team that probably is now in a spot to be bold and needs to be bold, the Minnesota Twins, their neighbors to the north and west. They're a team that after the Indians made their moves yesterday with Trevor Bauer, time for the Twins to act and really upgrade their rotation as well.
All right, as we come down the stretch, we're 110, 112, depending on who's playing, games roughly into the season. I always like to ask you this each week, but as we come down the stretch here, who do you think are the two best teams, best team in the AL, best team in the NL right now as we sit poised on the trade deadline approaching?
Best team in the AL right now, I simply cannot answer the Yankees because of my pitching questions about them. As they sit right now on the morning of the deadline. Morning of the deadline, the best team in the AL is Houston. The best team in the NL is Los Angeles. The Dodgers, they're so deep. Yes, they're flawed in the bullpen, and I look for them to try to find a way to get Felipe Vasquez from the Pirates. But in general, the Dodgers are the best team, best roster, I believe, in baseball, probably, in the National League, certainly. And then Houston on the American League side. Verlander was dominant last night. Clay, they're a fun team to watch. The Astros are. They brought in Yordan Alvarez this year. They still got their core. Carlos Correa is healthy again. And that's why, unless the Yankees do something powerful right now, Clay, I believe the Yankees will not be in the World Series. It would be the Houston Astros instead for the second time in 3 years.
Outstanding stuff as always. What else should we know? I know you've answered a lot already, but again, for people waking up across the country, Major League Baseball trade deadline officially 4:00 Eastern. Are there any other, like, is there a part of you that thinks, wow, this blockbuster, small chance of it happening? What else is out there that could make people by 4:00 Eastern look down at their phones or look at television as the news breaks and their jaws kind of drop?
Zach Greinke could move, Clay. That's one that's probably a surprise to a lot of fans. He has been mentioned a little bit, though. Big contract, hard to move him, but I would say teams that have a thin farm system but an interest in taking on that salary, like the Angels, the Astros, and the Phillies, watch them very carefully. Also, not quite as much conversation about bats these days, but Trey Mancini is someone who's got a lot of value and a lot of interest. The Rangers and the Astros, among the possible landing spots for Trey Mancini, who, of course, a great graduate of Notre Dame, outstanding player there, for the Baltimore Orioles, and I do think he could have a new team by the end of today.
Last question for you. How excited are you for Michigan to get back into fall football camp?
Can't wait. Here we are. August is right around the corner. It's tomorrow, my friend, so it's always how I look at things. Once the trade deadline passes, I'm able to actually open up those great college football previews that I've been buying since I was 8 years old and get a chance to read it. That begins my college football prep is starting tomorrow there in the month of August, and really excited about Shea Patterson in year two with, of course, Josh Gattis' offense. I think Gattis is what Michigan needed, a little bit of imagination here. We'll see how Harbaugh does in the final game of November. That, of course, is how Michigan's going to measure their season.
I am fascinated by those magazines, same way you are. I mean, it's a long, hot summer, and when you're at the grocery store, you're in the you're in the gas station or whatever, and you see those magazines hit the aisle, you're like, thank God, we're getting closer and closer to football season for sure. Always good stuff, John Morosi. Enjoy the day. Keep that phone charged up, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Love it, Clay. Thanks so much. I've had that same reaction since I was a kid. I love it about those magazines.
Oh, they are absolutely phenomenal. Breaking NFL news from Eddie Garcia. I don't even know what it is. What you got for us?
Yeah, the NFL Network is reporting that the New Orleans Saints and star wide receiver Michael Thomas have agreed on a 5-year, $100 million extension, making him the highest paid wide receiver in NFL history. So again, Michael Thomas and the Saints, 5 years, $100 million extension. That according to the NFL
Network.
Going to
be a fun night on Bourbon Street for Michael Thomas.
I would say so, and I'm sure Drew Brees is very happy about that as well.
Yes.
Also, Major League Baseball trade deadline coming up.
Products not available in every state.
Now back to Clay Travis and the Geico Outkick the Coverage Studios.
When we come back, we'll break down that brand new record-breaking contract for Michael Thomas, New Orleans Saints wide receiver. How much guaranteed money? Where does it stand all time for non-quarterback players? We're diving in. This is Outkick the Coverage on Fox Sports Radio.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com and within the iHeartRadio app.
When the Saints go
marching. Welcome back, Geico Outkick Studios. That music in honor of the New Orleans Saints signing a record-breaking $100 million deal. Wide receiver Michael Thomas and the Saints. It includes $61 million
Damn. In
new guaranteed money. That's the most in NFL history for a non-quarterback offensive player. That is the news if you're just waking up with us. Michael Thomas, wide receiver for the New Orleans Saints. Again, a new 5-year, $100 million contract, including $61 million in new guaranteed money. We've had a lot of fun on the show, but huge number for Michael Thomas there. Just an absolutely massive contract for him to get. And if you're a New Orleans Saints fan, I think the question you have to ask is, how many of those 5 years will Drew Brees actually be passing to him? Because Drew Brees, if I'm not mistaken, now 40 years old. He's the same age as me. Is he going to play till he's 45? Is this about trying to get Michael Thomas hooked up with Drew Brees to finish out the rest of Drew Brees' career? Or is Brees only got a year or two left, and then potentially it's Taysom Hill who will be throwing to Michael Thomas? That, I would think, would be a question on the top of New Orleans Saints fans' minds as they try to think about the latter years of this deal. But Michael Thomas, big-time payday again. That's a wild stat. The NFL's been around for a while. This is the most guaranteed money that a non-quarterback on offense has ever received. So $61 million in new guaranteed money, most in NFL history for a non-quarterback offensive player. We've had a lot of fun on the show today. Would encourage you guys to download the podcast. And I got a fun challenge for you. Fun challenge for you on the podcast. Tens of thousands of you are downloading the podcast every day and listening. A lot of you hearing this right now on the podcast. We need more reviews. I am told that reviews are important when it comes to your placement in the podcast store. So there are tens of thousands of you listening every day. go write reviews of this show, of my new Wins and Losses podcast, which I would encourage you guys to listen to. Bobby Bones is the guest this week. Kirk Herbstreit was the guest last week. Lots of awesome guests coming your way. There have been a bunch of those if you need something long form to listen to. Great conversations. I think a lot to learn from those if you're going to be on vacation or you got a long car ride coming up. But what I'm asking you guys is, write, give me 5 stars, right? Because I'm a 5-star talent. Give me 5 stars and write your most entertaining review that you can. And we'll start reading some of those on the show and giving you guys shout outs for making that happen. So again, I need you to go write reviews, load them up. Also, as always, people say, what can I do for the show? Well, the show is blowing up in a good way. The numbers and ratings skyrocket, everything else. But anytime we have guests, if you reach out to those guests and you say, thanks for coming on, enjoyed hearing you. Today's guests were Darren Revelle and John Morosi. I can tell you that makes a big difference because I do a lot of radio all over the country as a guest. And when a lot of people react to what I said on the radio show on social media, it makes me think that I'm spending my time in a good fashion. So that is the thing you can do. You don't have to agree with everything a guest says, but just go on, comment on something that they said, interact with them, and that makes a big difference in terms of the quality of guest. What I hear all the time from the guests that come onto this show is how blown away they are by the number of you that interact with them and share or agree or disagree with the opinions that they share on the show. That is something you guys can do, which would be absolutely fantastic. So we have talked about a great deal. Amir Garrett charging the Pittsburgh Pirate bench, one of the greatest brawls we can imagine in recent baseball, football, basketball, hockey history. We had a good discussion on that. LeBron James Taco Tuesday, does impersonating a Mexican person like LeBron James did, especially because LeBron is a super social justice warrior. Is that something that should be allowed for LeBron James to do? Lots of good calls on that. Just a good time all around on the show. Found out Darren Revelle paid $25,000 for the astronauts that walked on the moon's autographs on the New York Times for that day. Lots of good stuff. Make sure you don't miss any of it. We'll be back tomorrow in Major League Baseball trade deadline, 4 o'clock Eastern. John Morosi was great breaking that down for you as well. Keep your phones and your ears tuned to Fox Sports Radio. Make sure you don't miss anything. We'll be back tomorrow. Same bat time, same bat channel. Thanks for spending your Wednesday morning with us. I am Clay Travis. Enjoy your tacos when it's Taco Tuesday. But whatever you do, don't pretend to be Mexican like LeBron did. This is Outkick on Fox Sports Radio.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com and within the iHeartRadio app.